We're holding on Copeum and Bay's third line of the wide lines. Mishnah said chalitza b'shnayim. We said that if you did chalitza in front of two dayanim, where we said at the beginning of the parak was supposed to be three, or it was three but one of them turned out to be pasul, then we said there's machloikus whether the chalitza is good. The Tanakhama says it's pasul. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yechon Hassan will say it's kosher. We said at the beginning of the parak that according to the Tanakhama you need three.
Right.
And our Mishnah is saying that according to the Tanakhama you must have three. You cannot have less. If you have two, it's possible. Whereas according to Reb Shimon and Reb Yechon and Asandla, it's fine with two. It would be fine even if no dayanim were there. Amar Reb Yosef Amar Yomi Amar Reb Nachman Ein Halacha Kol Yisazur. We said this the other day that the halacha is not like that pair of Tanoim. The halacha is like the Tanakhama. Question is, why does Reb Nachman need to repeat it again? Didn't Reb Nachman already say, chalitza b'shloisha? We learned at the beginning of the parak that the halacha is chalitza has to be done with three. So why do you need to repeat again? The halacha is not like Reb Shimon and Reb Yechon HaSan, though, that it can be two. The answer is true. We need both of his statements. If we only had the original statement from the beginning of the parak, then you would think he means you should have three lachatchila. But b'di'evet, if you just had two, it's enough. That's why Reb Nachman specifically has to tell us the halacha is not like Reb Shimon and Reb Yechon and Sandler, even b'di'evet.
That's what we're saying
over here. And conversely, v'iyashmin and ein halacha koyisazug. But if you only told us the statement that we have over here, the halacha is not like Reb Shimon and Reb Yechanan, elakatanakama, but rather the halacha is like the Tanakama, we would think the other way around. Have amina di'eved, you would think that the di'eved is good enough to have three. Avlachatchila boy chamisha, but with lachatchila you should need five, as we learned at the beginning of the parak that Reb Yehuda holds, you need five. Tzricha, so therefore, by having both of these statements, we clarify. Reb Nachman means to say, you cannot have less than three, but you also don't need any more than three, even lachatchila. The fact that we do five, as we said at the beginning of the parak, is in order to make more pirsum for it, to publicize it. Then the Mishnah said, Ma'isa shecholtzu chula, that it happened that we said a yavam and yavama did chalitza. Now the expression in the Mishnah is that he did chalitza, just him and her, without them. Without anybody else being present on the face of it, the base hasurim in jail. And the matter came in front of Rabbi Akiva, and he said it's kosher. So first of all, the question is
three in jail.
That question. Well, no, because we're saying there's a different opinion. We're saying Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yechon HaSamla are saying I can prove to you that you don't need a base din, you don't need two, you don't even need a base din because you see these guys did it in jail. You see these guys did it alone. But the question is, forget that. Forget dayanim. Beinu labeinu mi yadina. If they did it by themselves without anybody else being present, meaning not even Adim, how would we even know that it's done? So some of Farshim explain the point of the question is exactly that. How could we believe them to say that chalitza is done? Other Farshim, I think the Ritva says the vort is that chalit. We know there's a general rule that a dover shiva erva. We know when there are Adim for something, we know there's two different kinds of things that you need Adim for. There's some things where you just need Adim in order to confirm that the matter took place. You know, if I lend you money, for example, we don't technically need Adim for it. But it's a good idea to have Adim so that later on, you know, if problems develop and I have proof that I actually... Right. On that kind of thing, the Gemara has the expression, la'ivri sadi el l'shkari, that the witnesses only needed to guard against liars, people who might deny that they owe the money. Shkari is liars. Yeah. On the other hand, then you have things where the Adim are actually needed for the thing to even happen. Kedushin being a classic example. Right. If you go and are Makadish a woman, just you're on a desert island and you're Makadish her, nothing happens.
It doesn't
need a get or anything. You need two Adim for it to happen. So the question is, according to the Ritva, how if you don't have Adim, how did the chalitza even take place? How is it even a valid chalitza? But again, according to the first explanation, it's not so much that. We could argue maybe chalitza is not considered a davar shebe erva, but then the question is just how can we believe them to say that they did it? No, but here we're saying that it's kosher, so how could it be? Because the case was that there were witnesses standing outside and they saw it. So yeah, they weren't in there in the jail with them. That's what it means. Beina means that there was no base in presence, but there were Adim standing outside. Now, they had a question. What does it mean when the Mishnah says, when the Mishnah tells us the case? Is it Maisa Shechotzu Beinu Lebeinu Avroi? Is it that the chalitza took place outside the jail? But the shaila was brought to Rabbi Akiva when he was in jail, and we know the famous story how Rabbi Akiva was in jail for teaching Torah. Or does the Mishnah mean that the actual chalitza itself took place in jail? Because you can read the Mishnah either way.
Rabbi Akiva was in
you can
jail.
Read the. You, we know Rabbi Akiva was in jail. But the question is it that the Yavam and the Yavama were someplace else, and they did this chalitza beinu lebeinu, and now the Chachamim aren't sure, so they went to ask Rabbi Akiva in jail? Or is it that the Mishnah means the Yavam and the Yavama themselves were in jail when they did this chalitza? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, it's both. Beveisa asurin hayamaisa, ulaveisa asurin ba'maisa. The chalitza took place in jail, and the shaila was brought to Rabbi Akiva also in jail. The Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi here an interesting thing. If the Romans forbade them to teach Torah, then how are they going to ask the Shiloh to Rabbi Akiva without putting everybody in danger? The Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi an example of Jewish brains. Rabbi Yochanan and a sandler, the same Rabbi Yochanan and a sandler from our Mishnah, pretended to be a peddler, and he walked around in the streets outside the jail calling out different kinds of things for sale. Anybody need needles? Anybody need knitting hooks? If somebody does chalitza by themselves, what's the din? Like this, the Romans won't pay attention. They'll think he's just advertising his wares. And Rabbi Akiva peeks out of the window of his jail cell and calls out, "You have any spindles? You have any kosher?" And thus they knew it's kosher.
Do you have any kosher?
Yeah. Yes.
Who said that?
The Yerushalmi said it. The Yerushalmi said it. Tanan Rabbanan. Now we go on to a new topic. We learn in a braisa. Chalitza muta'as k'shera. A chalitza that's done under mistaken premises is kosher. Ezri chalitza muta'as, what does that mean? Amar Shlokish. For example, kol sh'omrim le'chalot v'kachat ha'kainza. For example, you might tell the Yavam, now you're talking obviously a case where the Yavam doesn't want to do chalitza, even though that's the right thing to do, because the Yavama has a valid claim that she doesn't want to marry him, for example, as we'll see examples in the Gemara. So the Yavam, though, is being stubborn, he doesn't want to. So you might trick him, for example, by telling him, you know what, do chalitza, and that will be the way, that will be the ceremony that you need in order to marry her. So then he's done the chalitza, and then you tell him, tough luck, you know, we tricked you. Yeah. However, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan says, how could that be? Ani shoyne ben shniskaven uvulei niskaveni. We learned a braisa. We learned it the other day. Whether he has kavana and she doesn't have kavana, ben shniskaveni uvulei niskaven hu, whether she had kavana for chalitza and he not. Chalitzas psula, then it's pasul chalitza. Achi skavnu shneim keachad. Unless they both have the kavana. Achi amet chalitzas k'shera. How can you say the chalitza is kosher? Yeah. Ella. Right. So actually, some mafreshim talk about what is Rish Lakish thinking. There can be a couple of different kinds of kavana. We talked about the other day. There can be a matter of kavana of kinyan. There can be a matter of the kavana of actually just taking off the shoe. There can be a kavana to release the zika. Whatever, you know. Anyway, Ella, so no, what is it? Kol sha'omrim lo, chalot sha'omrim lo, chalot lo, amanach shetit lo chamasayim hu. For example, you tell him, do chalitza on condition that she'll give you 200 zuz. And then she doesn't have to give him the 200 zuz. So that's the misleading him. Tanya nami hachi.
That's kosher.
That's kosher because we have an important, Rashi makes an important point like this. We know there's a general rule throughout the Torah that you can attach a tnai, you can attach conditions to an action, attach conditions to something, and the thing only takes effect if the conditions do. We've learned about it before in the case of Kinyan and in many other things. So why doesn't it work over here? The difference. So Rashi says the difference is that chalitza. Where do we learn the whole concept that you can have a tnai, you know, that when you're making a deal you can attach a tnai to it? We learn it from the story of B'nai God B'nai Reuben, where they come to Moshe asking for territory on the east side of the Yarden, and Moshe, after he finishes telling them off, tells them that, you know what, if you cross the Yarden and then help the people fight and then conquer the land, then yes, you can have this territory. So we learn the concept of a tnai from that. So therefore, there's a number of rules about whether you can attach a tnai to something. One of them is, Rashi says, it has to be that it's something that is capable of being done by a shliach. So, for example, a business deal. If you're able to appoint a shliach for something, then you're able to attach a tnai to it. So, for example, when it comes to a business deal, I don't have to sell you something directly. I can do it through a third party. Therefore, I can attach it tonight. When you're giving a get, a husband doesn't have to give his wife the get directly. He can give it through a shliach. Therefore, it's possible to have it tonight. Chalitza has to be done with the yavam and the yavam's own body. Since you can't make a shliach for it, therefore you can't attach a tanai either. So therefore, even though the tanai doesn't get fulfilled, the chalitza is still a chalitza. That's one explanation. There's a different explanation that the Or Sameach and the Rambam brings, and Reb Chaim Brisker says something similar. That the difference is that the difference is chalitza is something where basically it's just the action itself that makes the thing. Once she takes off the shoe, we said before you need kavana, but again, there's different kinds of kavana. So once the action of the chalitza is done, then that's it. There's no taking it back. He says it's similar to shechting. It's like you can't shecht al tanai. You can't say I'm shechting this animal al tanai, and if the tanai doesn't take effect, then the animal's not shechted. What's done is done, because the matter is just the ma'aseh that you did. Same thing with chalitza. As opposed to, for example, giving a get, where it's not just a matter of giving the get, where there has to be a kavana, where there has to be an intention of chrisus involved, that you're actually cutting off the marriage bond, so then it's possible to attach a tanai to it. Anyway, the point is that
shechting, I understand, but...
So chalitza, same idea. He makes the distinction that chalitza does require a certain degree of kavana, but not the same kind. It's basically just a matter of doing the action of the chalitza. So far we're saying it's no problem. We're going to see in the Gemara soon. Tani nami hachim, we learned similarly in the Braisa, chalitza mutas kshera, that chalitza where we've misled into it is kosher, and the Braisa spelled out, ezeri chalitza mutas, what is a chalitza under false pretenses, kosher omim chalot la amanas shetit lacham asayim zuz, if they tell him, for example, do chalitza on condition, she'll give you 200 zuz. So we see like Rabbi Yechanan's explanation. And the Braisa continues, umais v'isha achas shenoflo lukne yavam she'en hogun la, it happened once, that a woman had come up for Yibum in front of a Yavam who's not proper for her, as we'll learn on Amud Beis, and as we've learned before, Beis Din talks to them and figures out, is it a good idea in this scenario, in this situation, to do Yibum? Or is there a great difference in their ages, for example, which is going to cause friction? Are there other reasons that maybe Yibum shouldn't take place? So in this case, the Yavam and her weren't compatible. But he didn't want to do Yibum. But Amru Loi, so they told him, Chaloit Vam Anas Shetit Mecham Asayim Zuz, do Chalitza on condition she'll give you 200 Zuz. Uva Ma'ayit Lefnei Reb Chiyah Ve'Yechshira. And the matter came in front of Reb Chiyah, because she didn't end up paying the 200 Zuz. And Reb Chiyah said, it's kosher. So we see that it's good. What? But you have to do what you have to do in this case. It's the only way to do it. So Gemara gives another example. Ha'udah Asa L'Kamedir Reb Chiyah Ba'aba. A case of Yibum or Chalitza came to Reb Chiyah Ba'aba. Amalo, so he tells her, Viti Amoidi, my daughter, stand up. So Rashi has two explanations of what Amoidi is. Let's first go through the first explanation and say the story, and then we'll go through the second. The first explanation of Rashi is he's telling her, stand up, in the sense, get up and go do Yibum with him. You should go ahead and do Yibum. Amalo, Amrala Ima. So the woman's mother says to Reb Chiyah Ba'aba, in this case, it's not good for her to do Yibum. Yeshivasa zui amidasa. For her to sit and avoid Yibum would actually be the better way of standing. It's better to be mekayim in the mitzvah in this case by doing chalitza rather than Yibum. Amala yadatle. So he asks the mother, why? Do you know anything wrong about the Yavam that you're saying your daughter is better off not marrying him? Amrulay ain't, so she says yes, Mamoino Udukhazila, because the Yavam knows that my daughter has money. And he's marrying her for her money. But Kabayla Mechlamina. He wants to consume her money. He wants to marry her for her money, basically, and then eventually divorce her. So in that case, I'm saying that in this case it seems to not be a very good idea for him to do Yibum. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation of Rashi is that it goes like this. Amoidi means literally stand up. He's telling the Yavama, there's a Beis Din proceeding, there's a judicial proceeding going on over here. That when the Baal Din come to Beis Din, they have to stand up, the Umdu Shnei Anoshim. So therefore, stand up. So in that case, her mother says to her, Yeshivasa Zui Amidasa. She can't, her sitting is her standing, meaning she's a cripple. She's not able to stand up. So Reb Chiyah Ba'aba asks him, Does your Yavam know of that he wants to do Yibum? And she says, yes, basically he's trying to marry her for her money. Either way, according to either explanation, Reb Chiyah Ba'aba realized that obviously it's not a good idea to do Yibum in this case. So he asks the daughter, do you in fact not want to marry him? And your mother's saying that's not a good idea, but what about you yourself? You have your own opinion. Amr Lailai. So the Yavama told him, no, I do not want to marry him. But the Yavam didn't want to do the chalitza. So Amalei, so Rav Chiya Abba tells him, chalitza over kachat hakonza. He tells him, like Rosh Lakish said before, do chalitza, and that will be how you marry her. He tricks him. Levasa the chalitza, after he does chalitza, Amalei, then Rav Chiya Abba tells him, you know what? Too late. Hashta minach is talala. Look, at this point she's possible to you. Chalitza, chalitza ma'ayasa. Then in this case, you had better go and do a proper chalitza, kiyechid, the tishtri la'alma, because this way at least she'll be able to marry somebody else. At this point, Mepharshim explained, at this point, if he were to not do Chalitza, since he himself can't do Yibum anymore, first of all, it would leave her in Aguna, obviously, but second of all, it would be Koifin Amidah Sadaim. It's one of these cases where we say that you can force a person to do the right thing because he's not going to gain anything at this point. He has nothing more to gain because he can't do Yibum with her anyway. It's just he's trying to prevent her from gaining. This is called Koifin Amidah Sadaim. Like, don't act like a person from Sadaim who begrudges other people good when you yourself aren't losing out from it. So therefore, at this point, you can force him to do a proper chalitza, given that we said before, according to Rish Lakish, it would have been a good one, but according to Rabbi Yechon, and it's not. Nevertheless, it was enough to pass her. Now, why didn't he do the Masayim business? So the Aruch HaNer says, very simple. The whole point is, we're saying the Yavam was trying to marry her for her money. So he's not going to be bought off for 200 zuz. So you have to use some other method. The Yerushalmi, by the way, tells the story a little bit differently. The Yerushalmi tells that what Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Rav Chiya Bar Vod called him over there, says to the Yavam is, this Yavama, maybe she wants to marry you, fine, but she doesn't want to do it as Yibum. She wants to do it as a normal marriage. Do Chalitza, break the Zika, then you'll be able to marry her, a normal marriage. So he does the Chalitza, and afterwards Rav Chiya Bar Abba and Rav Chiya Bar Vod tells him, tough luck. At this point, he says, even Moshe and Shmuel couldn't be matter her to you. And the Yerushalmi goes on to say that the Yavam was very critical and had some sharp words for Rav Chiya Bar Abba in return. But anyway, that's what it was saying. He did though. He had him do the first chalitza enough to pass all of her.
So doesn't he realize at that point that he passes her for
he passes her for all the brothers, but for himself also. So at that point, he might as well then at that point Rav Chiya Bar Abba can force him to do another Yavam. By doing what? The second chalitza? At this point, Beis Din can force him to. That's what we're saying. It'll be kofin amidat sadayim. Beis Din can force him to do the chalitza at this point because the first chalitza they couldn't force him to because he could argue it's not amidat sadayim. I have something to gain. I want to marry her. But once he's done the one chalitza under mistaken premises and already at that point she became possible to him, then.
Is there a chen when getting
geshen? No, chen and get, we're going to talk about soon when you can be kofa, when not. But anyway. Chen and geshen is that you can't give a woman again against her will. It's a different matter. Anyway, another case. No, because by a get, if a woman doesn't want to accept a get, then you have the heter meyer rabbonim. The husband can get a heter from 100 different rabbonim and be able to marry again, be able to be married. It is a big deal, but still. No, because a get has different rules than chalitza. So we're going to talk about that soon.
Right,
but first, anyway, come on, let's move. Another case, the Gemara tells, Bas Chamur de Rapapa, the daughter of the father-in-law of Rapapa, so this would make her Rapapa's sister-in-law, Nafla Lifne Yavam Shein Hagunla, she also came up for Yibum to a Yavam who's not compatible with her. But again, the Yavam didn't want to do Yibum, didn't want to do chalitza, I mean. Also, Hamed Abaya, so they came to Abaya. Amalei, so Abaya tells him, Chaloitzlo v'kachat ha'kainza. So he tells him the same thing as Rav Chiya Bar Abba did. Do chalitza, and then you'll be able to marry her thereby. However, Amalei Rapapa, lo sovel amar lahad amar Rav Yechanan. Don't you agree with what Rav Yechanan said, that's no good? That's not a valid way. That's not going to be a valid method of doing chalitza in a way that'll make her mutter to everybody else. Okay, so Rabbi asks him, Bela Hefi Emile, no, so what should I say instead? Omale, so Rabbi tells him, try the other method. Chaloit Lama Nashitit Lama Saim Zuz. Do Chalit Saim condition, she'll give you 200 Zuz. Now, the vort is, Mepharshim say, either that, now, technically, Rapapa's objection isn't really such an objection on the face of it. We could have done, like the Pia Ba'aba's case, have him do the first chalitza and then have him do a second one. So different Mepharshim talk about the idea that either it's better not to have to do two chalitzas if you can get away with it, or better to do the Masayim Zuz thing, and that way you only have to do one chalitza. Or another possibility is here, this guy in this situation here with Rav Papa and Abaya was a very powerful, influential person, so it wasn't going to be possible for the Bishop to force him to do the second chalitza, and then she'd just be stuck. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So he does the chalitza, levasa the chalitza. After he does chalitza, amalah zil havle. So Abaya says to the Yavama, okay, now go give him the 200 zuz. Amalei, so the Papa tells him, why should she have to pay the 200 zuz? Can't she argue meshatani b'cha abdalei? Can't she argue that I only said it as like an exaggeration, like I only said it to trick you into doing the right thing? And I can give you an example. Miloi Tanya, don't we learn in a braisa something similar? Harei shahaya bereach mibeis ha'asturim. Suppose you have a person who's escaping from jail. V'hoisa ma'abar alafonav, and there is a river crossing in front of him where there's a ferry. You have to pay the fare for the ferry. But Amalei told dinner of Havi Reini, and you say to the ferryman, here, take a dinner and take me across. Now, a dinner is much more than you would usually pay for a ferry crossing. So it'd be, you know, it'd be the equivalent of nowadays. You know, you're going on the ferry and then offering the guy, $1,000 to get you across. You know, when really the ferry crossing costs, you know, $10. Amalei Ella Skare. The din is, in that case, the ferryman is only entitled to his regular skar. Because you can argue, Alma, Amalei, Meshatani Bach. So you can argue because of the danger, because I didn't have time to sit and bargain with you, and if I had said $10, you would have said, maybe not. We can cross in a few hours or whatever. So I had to tell you this outrageous amount to get you to take me across quickly.
You offered him $100 instead of $10.
Yeah, whatever. But the fact of the matter is, I didn't do it as something binding. Hachanami Meshatani Bach. So he also let her argue that I was just doing it to get you. I was just saying 200 zuz to get you to. It's not called snitching.
Why? Because you have no intention to
cheat. Because that's not what's called snitching. Yeah. It's called whatever it would be called. You could call it exaggerating, whatever.
Wait, did you give him the money and then claim the money back?
No, once she gives him the money, she's not going to have any grounds.
In the ferry?
Yeah. No, not necessarily. He gave him, well, maybe told dinner about it. Yeah, maybe you have the right to collect it back. Yeah, okay. Anyway, but in this case, she wasn't going to be able to get the 200 zuz back, so her papa is objecting to Abaya. Why should she have to pay it in the first place? Amalei, so Abaya asks him, let me ask you something. Avucha Hecha, where is your father? Like, where did your father live? In other words, Amalei B'masa, he says he lives in the city. Imach Hecha, Amalei B'masa, he says in the city. Which means, what's the point of bringing that in? How does that come in? So Rashi explains that Abaya is saying to her papa, You're very sharp. You know everything right off the bat. You obviously must have parents who are supporting you now while you're learning in yeshiva that you have a menuchas nefesh to be able to learn and become so sharp. Yoivu Ene, Sabaya put his eyes on them, were shriven, and they passed away. Now what happened? I mean, how did they deserve such a thing? So first of all, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin writes in his notes in the back of the Gemara that it's not Abaya didn't do that on purpose. Shalom, he says, what happened was, we know Abaya himself was a double Yosef, the Gemara mentions in Kedushin. His father passed away before he was born. His mother died in childbirth. Mother passed away in childbirth. An orphan.
Two parents.
No, a Yosef is somebody who's missing a parent. Abaya was a double Yosef. He was missing both his parents from right when he was born. So when he's talking with her papa over here and he realizes that her papa has two living parents who are able to support him, then in a way, it so impressed him that somebody should have such a thing that which I don't, that like that inadvertently led to an ayin hara. I've seen other explanations also, including one very interesting one that Abaya felt, yes, you know what, Rapapa, you're very sharp. But you know what? Are you using your sharpness in the right way? What are you saying in effect? That you should say that this Yuvama is allowed to lie? In that case, if you're getting so sharp in Torah because you're able to live and eat at your parents' table, your parents already have lived in Bigvura Shmonim Shana, they've already lived to a ripe old age. Maybe it's time that they live on your own.
And that every campaign is necessarily a difference.
Again, according to yeah. Yaakov Emden, it wasn't a purposeful thing; it was accidental, basically. And according to this other explanation, And the fact of the matter is, in the end, the halacha is like the papa in this case that yes, the yavama has the right to say mishata ani b'cha, and therefore not to have to pay the 200 zuz.
Let me go back on the word.
Yeah. Tanya Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, continuing on this topic, Chalitza mutas kshera, Chalitza under false pretenses is kosher, like we just learned. Get muter posel, but a get that's done under false pretenses would be posel. On the other hand, we didn't say, now we're talking, now we're talking, yeah. On the other hand, Chalitza mu'usis psula, a Chalitza that was forced is posel. Get mu'usa kosher, where the get that was forced is kosher. In certain cases. Wait. The question is, hechidami, what kind of case are we talking about? When we say that it was forced, if it's talking about that based in forces him, as I was going to say in a minute, then I feel the chalitza nami, then the din is even a chalitza. Under such circumstances, it's fine because he says, no, because it's fine because he says roitzani. In the end, the fact that he says roitzani is good enough. There's a very famous Rambam on that in Hilchos Gerushin, which the Rebbe used to quote it all the time, that why is it that if Beis Din forces the guy till he says roitzani, why is it effective? Because deep down, every yid wants to do what the Eibishter wants, but he has a yetzahara that prevents him. So when Beis Din is compelling him and doing whatever they need to compel him to do the right thing, then that takes away his yetzahara and allows his basic nature, his nefesh elokim, to reassert itself and then make him do the right thing. As a practical matter now, as a practical matter, this whole business of forcing somebody to give a get or chalitza is extremely complicated, and plus the fact that nowadays most batidinim don't have that kind of power anyway, and that's why to a large extent it's not really used as nowadays, because you have a real problem of where to draw the line, what's the proper kind of compulsion, what's not, what are the cases when you're allowed to compel and when not, and if it's the wrong thing, you have a get puzzle, and that can cause all kinds of problems. Anyway, so if he says roitzani, I feel a chalitza nami, then even chalitza should be kosher. The eloi omar roitzani, and if he doesn't say I want, I feel a get nami, then even a get ma'usa is also possible. The answer is loy, hachi kama. What the braisa means is like this: chalitza muta'as la'olam kosher. A chalitza under false pretenses, like the 200 zuz business or whatever, is always kosher. The get muta la'olam possible. A get that was done under false pretenses is always possible. Chalitza ma'usa is forget ma'usa, whereas when it comes to a chalitza that was forced or a get that was forced, zimnin kosher for zimnin pasul. It depends. Sometimes it can be kosher, sometimes it can be pasul. Namely, hodo amar roitzani, hodo loy amar roitzani. You could have the case where he says, I want, or the case where he doesn't say, where he doesn't say, I want. D'tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, we see that him saying roitzani is effective even if he was forced into that. The Braisa says, Yakrivoise, when the Pasuk says that the person has to bring his carbon, that the person brings his carbon, Malamat Shakofinoise, that means that Beis Din forces him. We're talking about either, for example, we're not talking about, for example, a Chatas or something like that he's Chayavin. Beis Din won't necessarily force him for that because basically if he doesn't want the Kapara, that's his problem. We're talking about, for example, a carbon that he donated a carbon to the Beis Mikdash. He made a neder, I promised to bring a carbon, and now he doesn't feel like doing it. So Beis Din can force him. But you would think that means that he has to bring the carbon against his will. No, the pasuk says it has to be with his will. Okay, so what does it mean? On the one hand, yakovayse means you force him. On the other hand, lotzoyne means that he wants to. Okay, so kofinayse achem roitzani, you force him until he says, I want. And that's considered wanting, like the Rambam that we just said.
Because of
the neshama. So you also find with a get, same thing, you can force him till he says roitzani. So yes, the same thing applies to a chalitza. When necessary, then you also force him until he says roitzani. Another din, Amar Rava, Amar of Schoira, Amar of Huna, Chiltzin Afapishen Makirin. Beis Din can arrange a chalitza even if they don't know the people. So if you just have a man and woman come to Beis Din to do chalitza, we have no idea who they are. We don't know necessarily that he's her yavam and she's his yavama. Nevertheless, we can do the chalitza. And memanin afapishen makirin. Similarly, we can arrange a miyun even if we don't know the people, even if we don't know that she's his wife and she's a ktana, etc. Because of that, because the actual chalitza and miyun can be arranged without Beis Din even knowing who they are, ein kosvin get chalitza aleim kein makirin, they will not write a document that the woman can use to show that she had chalitza, unless they recognize them, because, not Beis Din, we're talking about the edim. If you have edim observing the chalitza, so in those times, it used to be common, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, although nowadays it doesn't seem to be the general thing to do, to write a get chalitza. But they used to have, that we'll talk about on Amud Beis, some of the Nusach of it, that they would write out a document certifying that the woman had gotten chalitza. So the Edim might write that. The Edim might write that out. Normally the Beis Din would write it, but in this case we're talking about the Edim writing it. If the Edim are observing a chalitza, they cannot write a get chalitza unless they actually know the people. Because what are you going to have? That Mela, the Beis Din can arrange the chalitza because fine. So they'll think they did chalitza. Okay, but they'll know the truth. That they'll know the truth, and they won't have a get chalitza to show to anybody else. She won't be able to falsely claim to anybody else that I did a proper chalitza. You can imagine, for example, you can imagine a Yavam and a Yavama where they don't feel like coming to Beis Din themselves. They hire two other people to come to Beis Din and then pantomime a chalitza. So as long as you don't give them a get chalitza, fine. She's not going to gain anything from it. She's not going to be able to use that to remarry.
Yeah, chalitza.
Obviously not, but that's the point. So as long as we can't write a get chalutza for her, then we're fine. There's no problem that there's no problem that can come out of it. But come on, if a get chalutza is going to be forged, then when they bring it to a Beis Din will check it out.
No, but I mean forged in the sense that they could make it up the whole.
No, that's why we're saying the Edim can't write the get chalutza unless they actually know the party. And similarly, the Ein Kosvin, get Miyun, Elayim Kein Makir. And similarly, they can't write a get Miyun unless it's the same kind of thing. You write a document certifying that the girl has done Miyun. You can't do that, Elayim Kein Makir, and again, unless they recognize the party. Same idea. The Chashinim are based in Toyin, because we're concerned about a based in that might make a mistake. What happened? So suppose, for example, these two people come and do chalitza without anybody knowing for sure who they are, and the agent write them out to get chalitza. What's going to happen? They're going to come to another Beis Din. The other Beis Din may make a mistake and not think to check it out thoroughly and make sure that the other Beis Din knew who these people were. And so we're not worried about forged get, per se. We're worried about that the other Beis Din may look. Look, okay, it says in this get that Avraham did chalitza, that Avraham and Sarah did chalitza. Okay, then Sarah is mutter to remarry, and they're not going to realize that Beis Din had no idea whether these guys are Avraham and Sarah. That was Rava said in the name of Rav Schoira. But Rava Didei Oimer, whereas Rava himself says, no, it's the other way around. Ein Chilton Elim Kein Makirin, you cannot do a chalitza unless you recognize the parties. The Ein Mamayin and Elim Kein Makirin, you cannot arrange a meal unless you know the two parties, or at least the one party, before we can discuss whether you actually need to know the husband, but at least you'd have to know who the wife is, to know that she's a Kana, etc. Lefichach, therefore, Kosvin get chalitza al pei shein makirin, therefore you're able to write, the Edim are able to write a get chalitza, even if they don't recognize the parties, because Beis Din did. The Kosvin get miyun al pei shein makirin, similarly they can write a get miyun, even though they don't recognize. The Loichashin and the Beis Din Toyin, we're not concerned about a Beis Din that might make a mistake. We're not concerned, in other words, that the first Beis Din, the one that actually did the chalitza or the miyun, might not have known this halacha. We assume that the Beis Din is going to know this halacha, that they have to recognize the party, and therefore at that point, if a get chalitza is written, then we're fine, because then we know that a good chalitza was done. Tosfos has a different girsa over here. Tosfos objects to Rashi's trap over here because we're kind of changing the meaning in the middle over here of what we mean based in Toyin. The first time we're talking about, the first case we're talking about in Rava's statement in the name of Rav Schoira, we're talking about the second based in possibly making a mistake. Here, at the end, we're talking about the first based in possibly making a mistake. So therefore, Tosfos prefers a different girsa that it's the other way around, that In Rav Schoira's version, we're not concerned that the second Beis Din is going to make a mistake. We are concerned the first one, right? Because they will go check out the situation. They will go find out. They'll go right to the first Beis Din and find out, did you know these people? Whereas Rava says the other way around, no, the second Beis Din might make a mistake. They might think the first Beis Din must have recognized them, and therefore we can't allow it unless we're sure that the first Beis Din recognized them. Okay, so now we're going to have
the point. Why should he decide the first person? What the point is for making a chalitza?
So we're saying they made a chalitza, but
why?
Because
they get married.
So that's the thing. For example, you could have a case. Tosfos Rid talks about a case. Suppose, for example, that you have to do the chalitza right on the spot because the Yavam is about to go overseas, and she's never going to have a chance again. She's going to be left in Aguna. Similarly with a Miyun, you have to arrange it right away because the Yavama might become a Gdola. So fine, afterwards, they can come back to the same Beis Din, let's say, and say, you know what, it was in front of you guys, don't you recognize us from, you didn't know us then maybe, but you recognize me now, and I can bring Edom now. who I am. No, it's not they could have made a mistake. According to Rav Schoyer's version, they're allowed. According to that Tadashi's understanding of Rav Schoyer's version, they're allowed to do that. They can get the chalitza or the miyun arranged as fast as possible before it's too late, and then afterwards they can go bring edim and then clarify the situation. So now the Mishnah is going to go through what's the sequence. How exactly does the chalitza take place? Mitzvah chalitza. Bohu v'yivim to the Beis Din, so the Yavam and the Yavama come to Beis Din, ehein masin le'etzahai genes lo, and they give him advice that's suitable for him. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, v'kar lo zikne ira v'gibru elo. The elders of the city call him and speak to him. We learned before that the advice is, they advise him, for example, if there's a big difference in the ages, maybe don't do Yavum, etc. So she says, my Yavam does not want to reestablish his brother's name in Yisrael. Loy over Yavmi, he does not want to do Yavum with me. He says, I don't want to marry her. They have to say these things in Lashon Kodesh. The Gemara explains in Sota various... Both of them have to say their lines in Hebrew.
Why both? No,
we need it to be said in Lashon Kodesh. So we learn, the Gemara explains in Sota, either we learn Gzeda Shava from the Anu Halavim, the Ansa, the Amra, or because it says Kacha. Whatever it is, we'll learn it in Soita next year, Bez Hashem. But either way, it has to be. This is one of those things. We know there's various things. There's certain things in Torah that can be done in any language. There's certain things that Dafka have to be done in Lashon Kodesh. This is one of the things that Dafka have to be done in Lashon Kodesh. Okay, next. The pasuk describes what happens next. The nikshe yivim to elav la'inei askenim, that the yavama goes in front of him, in front of the sight of the skenim. The choltanala me'aragle, she takes his shoe off his foot. The yoke of the and she spits in front of him. And the Mishnah adds, this has to be a ruy kanir l'dayanim. There has to be a spitting that's visible to the dayanim, which means a couple of things. By the way, it means that. It means, first of all, that they have to actually see it in Shulchan Aruch. It means they have to actually see the spit coming out of her mouth, and they have to see it, and they have to see it go. As the Gemara is going to explain, it has to go somewhere in front of the Yavam. Even if afterwards it gets blown away, it has to at least go somewhere in front of him before it gets blown away. So they have to see that. The Beis Yosef also adds that it should be a nice big gob of spit so they can actually see it.
So if the wind comes and
blows, we'll learn in the Gemara. Then the pasuk continues. V'amsav amra, she speaks up and says, "Kocha ya'asal isha shelo yivne as beis achiv." So should be done to the man who does not rebuild his brother's house. Ab kanah yumakrin. Originally, the din was that that's as far as they need to read to her. And by the way, with both the Yavam and the Yavama, what we do is the Beis Din reads to them, as the Gemara is going to explain. The Beis Din reads to them word by word, or phrase by phrase, what they should say, and they repeat after Beis Din. One thing is because that way, in case they don't know, at least this way they should, they'll be taught. And the other is because since it says va'ansa, which means to answer, so it has to be the answer after Beis Din. Anyway, so originally that was the din that it was only she had to say the line kocha yasul isha shalay yivnes Beis Achid. However, ukshehikra Reb Hurkanus tachas eila b'kfar eitzam. One time Reb Hurkanus was presiding over a chalitza under an eila, a pistachio tree, I think. The Kfar Eitam, in the village of Eitam, the Gomer of Kol Parsha, and he had the Yavama continue with the rest of the Parsha also, the word, the Nikla Shmei Yisrael Beis Chalutzana. Therefore, the Huchsikulias Gomer Kol Parsha, then from then on it became a Chazaka that you should say the whole Parsha, that the Yavama should say the rest of those words as well. Then the pasuk continues, "V'nikra shmei b'Yisrael beis chalutzano." What does it mean? It should be called his name in Yisrael, the household of the one whose shoe was removed. It means mitzvah, but dayanim, v'le mitzvah b'talmidim. It means it's a mitzvah for the dayanim to say chalutzano, but not the talmidim, the bystanders, and then everybody don't have to say it. But Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, no mitzvah kolayim nimsham loyim chalutzano. The mitzvah is that everybody who's standing there should say the words chalutzano, as the Gemara is going to explain.
They won't read to me.
We'll learn at the end whether it's a matter. We'll get to the end of the block before 9:30. Then we'll take a minute to explain whether it's a matter of demeaning or not. By the way, on Amud Aleph, that thing about Rapapa and Abaya, I forgot to mention one thing. This that we're saying that Rapapa accidentally or whatever it was gave Rapapa's parents an ayin, Abaya accidentally gave Rapapa's parents an ayin hara. It's brought that's why people who have parents leave shul during Yizkor in order to avoid that kind of situation. Back to our Gemara, that somebody who is missing their parents might accidentally give an ayin hara to the people who do. Amar Rav Yehuda, mitzvah chalitza, the mitzvah, the proper way to do chalitza is as follows. Kora, she says her line, mein yubami. The kore, he says his line, lechafatz lekachta. V'chaletza, she takes off the shoe. V'roikikba, she spits. V'kora, and she says her line, kocha yaasa, and chalutzana. What does Rav Yehuda come in to tell us? Masnisini. He's just repeating exactly what the Mishnah said. The answer is Hakamashmalan. The Chiddush, he's telling us mitzvah hachi. That it just means it's a mitzvah. The proper way is to do like that. The apich laslan ba. But if you flip around the order, if you do things in a different order, not an issue. Tani nami hachi. We learned similarly in Braisa, which we learned yesterday. Ben shekdim chalitza l'rikiko, ben shekdim rikiko l'chalitza. Whether the chalitza was done before the spitting, or the spitting was done before the chalitza, masha also asu, what's done is done. But yeah, but it's okay. Amar Abaye, this that we're talking about reading the lines, the Yavam and the Yavama, Haiman de Mikri Get Chalitza, when the Dayanim are reading out of the Get Chalitza, as we mentioned before, that they would write this Get Chalitza, and in the Chalitza, they actually, the text of the Get Chalitza, you can find it in the Rambam, in Hilchos Chalitza V'Yibum, in Hilchos Yibum V'Chalitza, the text actually includes the Psukim, that the text actually includes the Psukim that they would have the people, that they would have the people read. The Get Chalitza is basically a play-by-play of what's happening. It's a play-by-play description of what happened there in Beis Din. These two people came. She said, my husband died and my brother-in-law doesn't want to do Yibum. We called him. We checked with him. We found that Haka doesn't want to do Yibum. So we had her read the words like Abba Yavni and him read the words like Hafas Lekachta, et cetera, et cetera. The general minhag is it not?
Orally.
Right. Anyway, so if you're reading out of the Get Chalitza, you're reading Sukkim off the Get, and you're reading in order that they should repeat after you, loy likri, same thing would be if you're reading it out of a Sefer Torah or whatever, but yeah, loy likri lidida, loy l'chuda, v'l'chude, v'ova yavmi l'chude, be careful, you don't have her say loy by itself and ova yavmi by itself, demashma ova yavmi, because then it could be misunderstood. Loy, no, Ova Yavmi, he wants to do Yibum with me. And that's exactly the opposite of what we're trying to say. We're trying to say, Loy Ova Yavmi, he does not want to do Yibum with me. Ella Loy Ova Yavmi. So rather you have to have her say, Loy Ova Yavmi. Before we can discuss, is it good enough for her to just say Loy Ova together, and then Yavmi can be in the next breath? Or does it have to be all three words together, Loy Ova Yavmi? Similarly, when it comes to the Yavam's line, you should not read for him, you should not say for him, prompt him with loy l'chudei chafasti l'chudei, the word loy by itself and the word chafasti by itself, because again, you have the same problem, the mashma chafasti l'kachta, then it sounds like he's saying, I want to, loy, no, chafasti l'kachta, I want to marry her, ella loy chafasti l'kachta. That's Abaya. Rava Omar, Rava says, no, that's not an issue. Hafsuki milsehi, it's just an interruption in the middle of the state of the sentence. Hafsuki milsehi, less one bar. If you interrupt in the middle of the sentence, it's not a big deal. On the side here, it brings a gear stuff in the article. Hafsuki milsehi, it's just finishing off the sentence. Either way, the point is that Rava is saying, no, you say loy and ova separately, it's not a big deal. We know it makes up one complete sentence.
That's
what we're saying. In other words, according to Abaya, don't prompt him. Don't prompt her, for example, saying loy. Then loy, loy, ova, ova, yavmi, yavmi. Rather, say it together, loy ova, loy ova, yavmi, yavmi. Or according to the other explanation, loy ova yavmi altogether, and she has to read. So the Gemara tells Rav Ashi Ashkechel Rav Kahana. So Rav Ashi one time found Rav Kahana, who was his Rebbe, to come with star. He was going to a lot of trouble. Umikrula loy ova yavmi. He's going to a lot of trouble trying to get the Yavama to say the words loy ova yavmi together. What are you talking about? Loy ova yavmi is Hebrew. So Rav Ashi asks Rav Kahana. So Rav Ashi asks Rav Kahana, what do you need that? Don't you hold of what Rava said, that it's not necessary? So he said, no. Rava does agree when it comes to the Yavama's line, loy ova yavmi, that there it is necessary to say loy ova together, or loy ova yavmi together. Mainly by the Yavama's line, we can apply Rava's rule that said that Afsuki Mil said that it's just finishing off the sentence and it's not a problem. But by the Yavamas, since the Yavamas statement is the beginning of the whole thing, so there's more of a concern that she's saying loy as a separate statement and then Ova Yavmi as a separate statement. on the side of it, you would bring, Agoras Agro adds that the Rif and the Rambam have a Gusa, they have an extra line over here that we don't have in our Gemara, that Rava says, the same principle that we said the other day, the principle of Rav Zera about Kala Royal Bila, that if she's capable of saying Loi Ova Yabni together, and she just doesn't, she says them separately, not a big deal. But if she's not even capable of saying them together, then it would be an issue. So therefore, Rav Kahana is going through a lot of trouble trying to teach her how to say Loi Ova Yabni together so that at least she'll be able to. And then if it comes to the actual chalitza and she doesn't manage to say it all together, okay, then it's not a big deal. That has to be the potential, yeah. Omer Abaya, Haiman de Kosev Dita de Chalitza. So when you're writing a get chalitza, Lichtev Hochi. You have to write as follows. You say, we read to her, we read off to her word by word, phrase by phrase, whatever, from Meyen Yuvami until Ova Yavmi. We don't actually write out the Pesukim, as the Gemara is going to explain in a minute why. We read to him from the word Loi until Lekachta, instead of writing out the word Loi L'chafas Lekachta. And we read to her from Kacha until Chalutzanal. Meaning, because the Gemara explains in Gittin that the Torah is only allowed to be written all together. This was recently in Rambam Gimel Parakim. It'll be in Rambam Perek Achad soon. You're not supposed to write separate sections of the Torah. You can write separate chumashim, but you're not allowed to write individual portions of the Torah by themselves. Nowadays, there's more of a heter too because Eslasa Slashem, because otherwise the Torah will be forgotten altogether. But in those times, you were only allowed to write a whole Chumash or together. So therefore, how are you going to write out these individual psukim in the Get Chalitza? Therefore, he's saying you only write the beginning and the end of each sentence. That was the first and last word or two words of each sentence. On the other hand, Marzutra Mesartif Kosev L'Kol Parsha. Marzutra would draw lines, he would rule lines, like you have in a Sefer Torah, those scored lines that are meant to keep the writing straight, because you're supposed to do that when you're writing Sukkim. And then he would write out the whole Parsha. He didn't hold of this issue. It is a halacha, you're not allowed to write parts of the Torah separately, but we're going to see in a second, Rashi explains, that the we'll say in a second, the mask of Lamar Bar Yidi, so Mar Bar Yidi asked, how is that possible? We know you're not allowed to write separate parts, the individual parts of the Torah by themselves. Nevertheless, the halacha is like Mazutra. Means you're not allowed to write separate portions. What the Gemara talks about there in Gittin is, imagine you're teaching a kid Chumash. You're not going to give him a whole entire rolled up Chumash Bereshis, let alone a Sefer Torah to write from. The Pashtus, you'd want to write out a little scroll that has Chumash Bereshis, and next to your Chumash, and then next to your Pashtus Noach or whatever. You're not allowed to do that, we're saying. But Mazutra is saying to you that you do, that you can write it out in the Get Chalitza. Why? The difference is because in that case, you're doing it for the sake of learning. You're doing it so the kid can learn Torah. So that you can't do. You can learn from a whole Chumash and nothing less. Here you're not doing it for the sake of learning. You're doing it as a description, as a play-by-play of what happened in Beis Din. So therefore, it's not an issue. The only issue is when you're writing out Pesukim, you have to first score lines on the parchment so it's written neatly, so it's covered for the words. That's what we're saying. That they used to write a get chalitza afterwards, so the woman would have a raya that she had chalitza. Uh-huh. Nowadays, it's generally not done.
They used to put it on paper for proof.
Yeah.
It's not a real get.
It doesn't have all the dinim. It doesn't have. Yeah, it's a receipt, basically. Exactly. It's called that actually because get is the more general term for a shtar. Amar Abaya, Rokoko Kotatu Haruach. If she spits and the wind blows it away, then she hasn't done anything. Meaning she'll have to try. She'll have to try again. My time of a yoke of a fun of him, because it has to be she spits in front of him. So the saliva has to pass in front of him. Hilkach, therefore, hu aruch v'hi gutza, if he's tall and she's short, kotatu aruch, then even if the wind blows it away, doesn't matter, it could be fun of, you still have that at some point it was in front of him. As soon as it comes out of her mouth, it's already in front of him because he's taller. On the other hand, he aruka v'hu gutza, if she's tall and he's short, then it has to at least reach the level of his face. And then if it blows away, it's not a big deal. Another din about the spitting. Omar Rava. Now, by the way, we said the other day that the spitting is not really ma'akim. But we're saying the proper way of doing the mitzvah is that she spits. So that's why we're talking about this.
So what, he has to be
It has to be this, spit out the pass in front of his face, yeah.
Right.
At that point, or not in front of his face necessarily, because we're saying if she's short, it never passes in front of his face. She reaches only up to, to his chest, let's say. But fine, it was somewhere in front of him. It's somewhere in his field of vision. So therefore, that's good enough. Amar Rava, Ocha Tuma V'Roksa, if the Yavama ate garlic and then she spit, or Ocha Gagishta V'Roksa, or she ate earth and spit, this is the kind of earth they used to use in those days, or something like an antacid or something, sort of like Tums. And those cause you to have a lot of saliva. Then the spitting is no good. My time of yoga, my asthma, but in the lecture, but it has to be the yoga that she spits on her own, not that the saliva is dribbling out because of the stuff she ate, and you don't have it. Because of that. Because it has to be the yoga that she actually spits. Because of that, it says in Shulchan Aruch, nowadays we're not really certain what kinds of foods or whatever will cause saliva to flow on its own. Therefore, we ask the Yavama to not eat anything before the Chalitza. We maybe do the Chalitza first thing after Shacharis, and we ask her not to eat before that. And we actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch also, I think maybe it's in Aruch HaShulchan, whatever, that we ask her to talk as little as possible before it, because talking stimulates the flow of saliva also. V'amar Rava, and Rava says, Tzrich Dayanim Mechze Rucha Kinofik Mikumar Yavama. The Dayanim have to actually see the spit as it comes out of the Yavama's mouth. Yichtiv La'ini Eskenim V'yoka, as it says, in front of the Eskenim, she spits. Then the Mishnah had finished off, Nikr Shmei B'Yisrael Beis Chalutz Anal. We said, Mitzvah Dayanim V'lo B'Tamidim. We said that the Tanakama said the Mitzvah is for the Dayanim to say Chalutz Anal. And Rabbi Yehuda had said that, no, everybody there should say. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Pamacha Sayunu Yoshu Mifnei Rav Tarfin. One time we were sitting as Talmidim in front of Rav Tarfin, Uvasi Yavama Lachlitz, and Yavama came to do Chalitza, V'amar Lanu, and Rav Tarfin told us, Anu Kulchem, all of you should answer, Chalutzanal, 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 three times. Now, why three times? So some of Farshim say, it's just we find that anything that's meant to be publicized is said three times. We find, for example, when they harvested the Omer, Magolzem, many different... not Chazaka so much, but like to publicize it, to make a key into it. The Halachas Gdolus, though, has a very interesting explanation. The Halachas Gdolus is Shitta. Now, you were mentioning before the question, is that the Chalitza seems to be an embarrassment to the Yavam. So the Yerushalmi actually mentions over here at the very end of the Perek, is the Chalitza meant as a Gnai for the Yavam, or is it meant as a Shvach for him? Is it meant as a praiseworthy thing for him? So the Halachas Gdolus takes the view that it's a gnai for him. He says the idea is the Yavama is symbolically saying to him that it's symbolically saying to him, you didn't want to do chalitza for your brother, therefore you ought to be in mourning and you ought to be in chirim. And so why the three times chalitza now? She says, all the bystanders, everybody who's there, the whole crowd says, you deserve to have your shoe taken off for three reasons. Number one, because you're like an oval, because now your brother is completely dead, because he's not going to have a kiyum. Number two, because you're like in cherem, for not doing it. And number three, because you violated a mitzvah, because you didn't want to do the mitzvah of yibum. Nidri, not cherem per se, but nidri. Not really, but symbolically, and therefore you take off his shoe. So according to Halachas Gdolus, it's actually that's why you say chalitza now three times as an expression of gnai to him. On the other hand, according to the Yerushalmi, it may be the matter of chalitza, the shvach to him, and that's why you say kocha also the ish, which it's the same expression that says by Mordechai v'nikrash. Actually, no, the Yerushalmi quote v'nikrash may be Yisrael, that his name will be called in Yisrael, like it's an honorable thing that he did chalitza now. I'll tell you, I mentioned the other day, and I wasn't quite clear about it, but I looked it up, and I think I understand it a little better now. Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch gives an explanation about what's the idea behind Chalitza. He says, the Yavam is saying like this, you're right, somebody who refuses to uphold his brother's name, Taka deserves to have his shoe taken off and be dishonored or whatever. In my case, he's saying, basically, I'm not doing it because I don't like my brother or something. I'm doing it for other reasons. For whatever reason, I'm not capable of doing Yibum.
So that,
whatever, I'm not economically capable, or me and the Yavama are not compatible, whatever the possible reasons are. So therefore, it's like the Chalitza is being done and the declaration is being made and whatever he's saying, like, yes, this is what a person deserves who does it out of spite. But that's not me. I'm not doing it out of spite. I tackle love my brother and I would have wanted to uphold his name if I were able to. So therefore, you could say that it's a shvach for him. Hadron aloch mitzvah chalitza. Oh, you're right. Chavzayin Tevis, you're right. Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch, the outside of today, Chavzayin Tevis, it's true. There's actually an interesting little story about that. The English date that he passed away on is December 31st. What happened? They used to pay his salary as Rav of Frankfurt. They used to pay his salary every quarter of the secular calendar. So at the end of March, June, etc. When he's getting older, Rav Shamshon Afal, he's getting concerned. You know, what happens? He dies in the middle of a quarter. They paid him his salary in advance. His family is going to be having money that they're not supposed to have because he's not Rav anymore. So he made arrangements with his family. Make sure that, you know, make sure that you swear things away with the Gabayim, you know. So therefore, the Eved arranged a Hashgacha Parabbas. He passed away on December 31st. So Itaka didn't pass away owing, not having money in his possession that's not legitimately his.
He didn't cheat them for even one day,
yeah.
The reality is, he gives somebody a paycheck when he's alive.
No, the halacha is he wouldn't have been chayiv in it, of course not. Yeah. But he was in the middle of the city. He was in Frankfurt, yeah.